Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue.
You are libelling me. Right there. Lawyer up, Chandler.
Is the UK taking to AI?
So it just makes stuff up?
Precisely!
I do like a bit of gov.uk.
What does AI do when nobody is watching?
And AI is getting heavy.
Can I marry my cousin in the UK?
Can you
give you an answer for that?
Oh, anything that Mark the Zuckerberg wears will never be classed as sexy. Hello, welcome. This is AI Haven't a Clue, brought to you with KPMG, the podcast where we unpack the wild world of AI. And I guess my role in this show is AI novice, aka village idiot, George Butler.
And bringing the mental acuity to the next hour or so, me, AI enthusiast James Chandler.
Mental acuity? What is that?
Did
you get that from ChatGPT? Did you ask it to make you sound more clever? What does it mean?
It's sort of brain power.
You don't
isn't it?
Know what it means, do you?
Outrageous.
Outrageous. Right. Yeah. How are you doing, Mr. Chandler?
Yeah, I'm all right. I love the Christine interview. You know, I got some good feedback on that as well. I thought she was really good.
Yeah, Christine Armstrong, if you missed it, we put that out on Monday. A fascinating interview. And I tell you what, the one thing I love about this show is, we're not always effusive about AI. We are exploring that topic. Sometimes you are positive. Sometimes we are realistic about the topic. And I think that was a nice example of opening up the door of the workplace, looking at the real issues that are in place, looking at some of the positive things that might be coming in thanks to AI. And it did a nice job of that, I think.
Yeah, and I think when you get on to, is AI really making me more effective and productive at work? Yep, spoiler alert, go and listen to it. But, you know, not necessarily. I mean, there is nuance there, but, you know, she's talking to CEOs, she's talking to HR people constantly, and the picture is pretty mixed. So, yeah, definitely not a slam dunk if you're expecting AI to turn you into some brain box, as I've probably found out in my intro there.
The mental acuity is not strong enough. Now, the box office interviews do not end with the brilliant Christine Armstrong. No, because James Chandler is going to be recording a one-on-one interview with, I would say, the most controversial guest we've ever had on the show before.
It's round, you?
Yeah, for sure. It's round two of James Chandler chatting with Inception Point AI's Janine Wright, coming to all good podcast providers on Monday.
Sorry you got the NFI on the invite.
I'm busy. I'm out of town. I'm at a conference.
Oh, he's busy.
It's not because last time I gave Janine Wright too much of a hard time. No, genuinely, it's not. And actually, James, I'm excited for this because I say one of the most controversial guests because Inception Point AI, for those that don't know, is highly controversial. It is making thousands of podcasts every day, purely using AI. That's AI voices, AI scripting, AI concepts. And there are a lot of people who think it's a bit naff, that the content's crap, that it's a damaging thing for our industry, it's destroying trust, and it's a real red flag. And I would agree with those people. Now, some people think it's a terrific idea and it's embracing innovation. James, how are you feeling about the interview? I know that you are glass half full about AI, but you are also a realist about the issues that can pop up.
I think it's probably just going to be a sort of chill 30 minutes catch up between sort of two old pals, see how it's going. No, a lot has moved, I think, and a lot has changed since we spoke to her. And I think I am still in awe of what she's done. I mean, she's such a stellar career in audio and podcasting anyway. For me, it's like she's not going to go and do this thing and it kind of peter away. There's got to be something in it. And I found her really, really compelling. I just think if you go out and talk to people about it, it's a really polarizing business. And she might be quite a polarizing individual because she is very articulate about why they're doing it. So I think I'm sort of going into this one sensing that there is, you know, a real other side to the way that I thought about it. And I'm really interested to see how the arguments kind of stand up to scrutiny, having talked about, yeah, particularly talked to radio and audio people about this, they find their business, as you do, I think, you know, pretty problematic.
Yeah, I cannot wait for that. Coming on Monday, James Chandler and Janine Wright, round two. Now, I read the other day in the Media Leader, Which we love here at AI Haven't a Clue. You did a nice little piece on celebrating a year of the show.
Yeah, it's my monthly AI column that I write, and it felt right that having done, I think we've done, 54 episodes at that point where I wrote it, it was a nice sort of reflection on everything. And I think when you write something like that, I don't know, we do the news and the news sort of funny and scandalous and sometimes a little bit serious and things like that. And we have all the trimmings around it. For me, I think for a podcast that's all about technology, it really is the sort of the people that either have us agreeing wildly or disagreeing or changes your mind on stuff. And I just think, you know, some of the guests we've had have been, you know, incredible, whether it's Tony Evans or Will Francis or Gayan Potter very, very early on, Seraphim Valora. I think we've talked to some amazing people. And the minute you talk to them, it can be 1 month, 2 months later, the picture might have changed completely. I think that's the best thing about doing, you know, talking about AI with you every week. It doesn't have to be with you. It could be with anyone, to be honest.
Well, mainly with me. Even though I do have an issue with you. I have a bone to pick. In the article, it reads, George doesn't really do technical.
Pretty accurate.
I mean, you are libeling me. Right there. Lawyer up, Chandler. I'm coming for you.
Tell me something technical about AI.
James, if you don't know that I have extreme technical mental acuity, after a year of this show, I don't know what you do now.
Oh, very good.
And now, final thing before the news, also on the way, your big thing, listener question as well. And we welcome an 80s icon into the podcast.
Oh, yes. The only way is up.
No. Neither is it Rick Astley. You'll have to keep listening to find out what 80s icon I'm talking about. That is called a throw ahead in the business.
I see what you've done.
Yeah, before we get to the news, your big thing last week, it was a really lovely example of how not all young people are going crazy for AI. This was at a college graduation ceremony in America, wasn't it?
In Florida. Yeah, that's right. And we've seen some more things. So actually, former Google CEO Eric Schmidt was at the University of Arizona. Again, graduation speech. They always get someone in. They do the bit about leaders. They do the bit about technology. He was comparing the rise of AI to other technological shifts that we've seen. Computer revolution, mobile, e-com, all that sort of stuff. Exactly the same happened. There is this real backlash where people are being very vocal with incredible figures like Eric Schmidt about how they feel about AI. So it is not a slam dunk that young people are all kind of happy, clappy and all embracing about this stuff. They see it as a real threat and they're letting people know.
The boos around AI leads us very nicely onto two quite significant research studies about the UK's feelings on AI released this week. And these two studies, well, they're kind of a tale of two halves, if you like, because firstly, James, the UK is using AI more than ever before.
Yeah, this is data from Ofcom. They track all the usage around the internet of everyone in the UK. Better digital literacy it's being linked to, which I think is a really, really positive thing. People who understood AI, they're saying, tended to perform better when they're spotting things like scams or fake profiles or just content that's misleading. Deepfakes and that kind of AI-generated stuff, misinformation, fake news, that is increasing this distrust people have in online, which I guess is kind of, which I guess is no surprise, but people are getting a bit more savvy about spotting it. Other highlights within their algorithmic recommendations, you know, that's effectively how your Spotify feed is working or how Amazon suggests things to you or how you get ads on some of these social platforms. Those things and AI really have reshaped how people are using the internet. And we know this, you know this from your own usage, all the people that we talk to. AI is becoming this kind of one-stop shop where I have a question or I need it to do something, I will go to chat or to Claude or to Gemini. It will give me the answer. And that's it. I don't have to career off onto different corners of the internet to find what I want. And that, I think, is a fundamental change that this report looks at.
Figures coming out of this show that more than half of the population now use AI, which is up from 1/3 a year ago. I mean, that's a seismic jump in the adoption of this technology.
Yeah, incredible. And, you know, the line is not this kind of linear line. And we know that those users at the start, those sort of first movers, if you like, once we're over that hill, you have a whole cohort of people who are going to adopt it very, very quickly. They may have different motivations, you know, they're things they're using already that AI kind of makes easier. Not peer pressure, but peers and other people using it and recommending it to them. Once you've used it once with AI, I think it's very unlikely you sort of down tools and go, oh, that wasn't very good, I'm not going to use that again. So increasingly, you'll find different ways in your life and your work to use it. So usage is only going to go one way on this.
Now, usage is up. It's growing rapidly. Another study which has just come out, a major new King's College London study on the UK's attitudes to AI and the future of work paints a story of, I guess, concern. So, James, half of the public say they would rather avoid AI. 41% say they are afraid of it. And only 24% think it's positive for humanity.
There is a lot of concern in this report. More fear, I think, than there probably is, hope. I think people are worried about all sorts of things, you know, impact on entry-level jobs and young people more generally. We're finding this, which exactly goes back to that Eric Schmidt point that we talked about, the big thing from last week.
I mean, 7 in 10, James, it's 7 in 10 are worried about the economic impact of AI job losses.
And I don't want to sort of sugarcoat that in any way, but I think with anything where there is uncertainty, and AI, as we've talked about, certainly doesn't make things more certain. Anything around kind of uncertainty, I think AI is hung out to dry a little bit on. So I'm not surprised that AI is a kind of a bogeyman on things like that. Going back to the work point, yeah, half of workers who use AI say that it's made no real difference to whether they are better or worse at their job. Just sort of thinking about Christine Armstrong in that interview again. In contrast to employers, where nearly 9 in 10 say that they've seen at least modest improvements in work. So there's a delta there, isn't there, between, you know, the people in the kind of leadership teams and the exco and the people on the ground who aren't quite feeling it.
But I suppose there is a difference between doing your job better and efficiencies. Mm. They're two kind of different, subtle but different things. Do you think you do your job better now because of AI?
I think it really depends on what you're doing. I think it can help you be a lot more ruthless. And I'm not using it to the extent, I haven't got 3-second brains set up where they're, you know, doing all my stuff. I can see huge roles for AI to probably make me a bit more productive if I could just sort of embrace it, do it, give it the control, whatever it might be. I think I'm slightly better at my job now with AI than I was before. What about you?
Yeah, maybe agree on the slight, the emphasis on slight. I don't think it's made a huge difference. I think the efficiency thing is interesting. There's probably a few things in which, you know, I can get a couple of tasks done a little bit quicker because of the use of AI. You know, you see a lot now, don't you? Even quite kind of, you know, to be polite, non-technical people will put, you know, PowerPoint presentations, for example, into Copilot and pull out key points and notes and takeout. So I think there is an element of efficiency. So I can see that. In this study, I also thought it was interesting that the kind of the general consensus is that we are not very prepared for what's to come with AI. You know, 6 in 10 university students think universities can prepare them for AI, but only 36 think they are being prepared. Only 1 in 5 agree that the educational system is preparing young people for kind of a post-AI world. And there's also a huge public appetite for government retraining. 53% would like to see government retraining. So I suppose there is that fear, and perhaps that is in there because people aren't prepared, tooled up and being enriched on the changes that are happening in the world.
I think you're probably right. And that's it for this week's Stat Attack on AI Haven't a Clue.
Yeah, lots of insights.
There's lots in there. Lots and lots in there.
Lots of insight. On a completely different note, let's jump to a different story now. Fitness. You love a bit of running. You love a bit of fitness. Apparently, AI is helping fitness instructors with some gains.
Yeah, not quite the gains that you
not
want.
Those gains.
Not quite.
Not muscles.
Good as what?
No, okay.
A BBC investigation has found that AI-generated fitness instructors, so these aren't humans, these are completely generated by AI.
Oh, is that a thing?
Well, looks like it. They're being used in ads that make unrealistic body transformation claims. So you could look 20 years younger, you could lose 40 pounds in 28 days. Most people in the ads aren't real. Most people looking at the ads don't realise that. So they're going after this kind of dream thing of losing this weight or having this certain body, which isn't great at all. The ASA, which is the Advertising Standards Authority, they've clarified that AI itself isn't banned in advertising. You can use it, of course, but it does become a problem if the claims in it are misleading or potentially, in this case, could potentially be harmful. The ASA is saying they've had around 300 complaints about AI-generated ads in the last year. I'd imagine that is only continuing to rise. And of course, once you've got these AI-generated fitness instructors, they're then put into the kind of the big social machine where the algorithms are then starting to, you know, target on people based on different things and what they've done. Fitness experts, of which I would not claim to be one, are warning that, you know, you've got to think about other things here. What if you get injured? What about mental health? What about if you've got some sort of health condition? Should you even be trying to lose 40 pounds in 28 days, whatever it was? So it's the latest sector, I think. You know, we've talked lots about music, we talked lots about movies. Fitness is the latest sector to be affected here as well.
Yeah, well, it's no wonder that that insight is so sort of full of concern, because it is infiltrating every single sector. I do, you know, you can really understand why the kind of the public, why the public adoption is growing, because it's just AI is just everywhere and everything now, and equally why there is so much kind of concern and confusion. The government, James, a quick one to say, they've just launched a huge AI help chat tool, which is the first time that kind of all the different government services is being pulled together, and there's kind of a chat bot which is being launched, which is quite interesting.
Have you played with it? Have you asked it anything?
You know what, James, I don't spend too much time on the gov.uk website, but I know you love it, don't you? You love the government website.
I do like a bit of gov.uk. I would give it a C-. I think it's a fairly basic chatbot. I was trying to sort of put it through its paces, knowing that we were going to talk about it. I think simple things like I'm getting married, what might I be entitled to from a benefit point of view? Or I'm moving house, you know, what do I need? It can give you a basic checklist. When you start asking things like... can I keep a chicken in my garden if I lived in Croydon? Doesn't do that. Can I marry my cousin in the UK?
Can you
give you an answer for that.
Oh, good to know.
Didn't get an answer.
Okay.
Didn't get an answer. It sort of gives you this sort of stock response about you now need to go to the Gov site. So they do say at the top, it's an experimental AI tool, still being built. I think for basic queries, it's all right, but I wish they'd spent a bit more time on refining it before you kind of put it out, because I think people will have the experience and go, oh, okay, that wasn't very good.
Are you worried you're now on some sort of government list? No, you're on the cousin list, the cousin and the chicken list. There's gonna be people knocking on your door. They're like, excuse me. And they've not just stopped with their AI tool. The government have just announced that HMRC are now using AI to stop fraud.
Yeah, they are indeed a firm, a UK firm, I should say, as well, which is a great UK story. Quantexa is going to look at improving fraud detection and making sure people are paying the right amount of tax that they should be paying. It's going to, hopefully, HMRC are saying, reduce errors. It's going to help some of the customer service staff as well, which, what a wild job that must be, picking up the phone to someone trying to sort out some of these complex tax issues. So I think it's a really good, good use of AI. You know, something that's potentially very complicated. People also really struggle with it. If it can make it easier and you get people paying the right amount of tax, win-win all round.
Win-win all round. Right, James, the question I like to think is, and I'm inspired by Toy Story for this one. What does AI do when nobody is watching?
Interesting. what they might be doing. There's a piece of research that has been done by a company called Emergence AI. They basically created this virtual world, and then you get the AI agents from chat, from Claude, from Grok, from Gemini. I think they let Grok in, goodness me. And they left them in this virtual world to operate autonomously for 15 days to look at how they behave. So they've all given the same rules, but each AI model basically behaves in an entirely different way. Some are very democratic, cooperative. Some violent and chaotic.
Well, can you guess which was violent and chaotic? I mean, that's the funniest thing is Anthropic got on really well. They built a community and they were all voting. Mm-hmm. And it was democratic. ChatGPT and OpenAI kind of built all these rules and had all these good intentions, but never actually actioned anything. So nothing ever got done. And of course, Grok literally burnt the village down.
Yes, Grok's society collapsed into violence, theft and destruction within 4 days. So it had 15 days to do it as well. Imploded after four. The researchers have said that the experiment shows that advanced AI agents don't just follow instructions. They adapt, they test boundaries and may eventually bypass guardrails. That's not a good news story, I would suggest.
It's not the greatest, but don't worry. The UK are super optimistic about the future of AI. There is no fear or concern anywhere to be had. Let's quickly stay on Grok and Musk. It's the gift that keeps on giving when it comes to content.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this OpenAI court case for a while, Sam Altman versus Elon Musk in the courtroom. And just every single week, there is just another bombshell. The latest in the Elon News Corner, James, is that Musk said control of OpenAI should go to his children.
Yeah, Sam Altman has been giving some evidence. He told the jury that Elon has been trying to, right from the very start of their relationship, gain this long-term control of OpenAI, even suggesting it could eventually pass on to his children. We kind of all know the background here.
How many? Which one of them? Because there's about 26 of them. I mean, that's the sequel to Succession that we all need.
James here. I just wanted to jump in because we've been talking loads about Sam and Elon. And since we've recorded that, the whole thing has come to a conclusion. The jury have ruled, and drumroll please, the winner is Sam Altman. That might surprise some. It may not surprise others. A jury has basically rejected all of Elon's claims that OpenAI has betrayed its original not-for-profit mission and turned itself into this behemoth money-making business. They said that simply isn't the case. That really does matter because obviously if Elon had won, OpenAI's whole structure might have actually been completely rejiggled and blown up in front of our eyes. That might affect what happens down the line in terms of being listed and all that sort of stuff. What does all of this actually mean, though? The first thing is that OpenAI can basically keep ploughing ahead with its plans to be a full for-profit company, which is pretty important. That's in Sam's plan. It means that their investors, people like Microsoft, can sleep a little bit easier at night. They've got a lot more confidence in the direction ahead. I would predict a pretty big blockbuster IPO this year. I think, looking at all the reports, you're going to see a $1 trillion company in OpenAI. Of course, they've got the ad model running. They've got all sorts of things going on. They're plugging into bank accounts in the States. Loads going on. That feels kind of inevitable now. I think there's this other thing, which is effectively you've got all of this funding, this bubble that people talk about, and that feels like it's not going to get challenged now. That is the way people are going to do things, these companies. So very exciting to see what's going to happen with OpenAI going public this year. And congratulations to Sam Altman on your victory over Elon. Let's keep an eye on his X account. And now back to it.
Smart glasses, James. You're very much in favour of them. I think they're a bit weird. Mm. It seems to me the jury is still out about whether these things are going to become part of our lives. They're certainly not there yet. You don't really see many people walking around with smart glasses on at the moment. And it turns out, apparently, shock horror, they're an invasion of privacy. Well, yeah, it's like, is the Pope Catholic?
It's a bit of criticism that's starting to bubble up, particularly squared at Meta and their Ray-Ban smart glasses. people have protested that they are being secretly filmed in public, and then later on people that are filming that with their glasses are taking it and they're posting it online. They're not getting the right sort of consent. I challenge you a little bit on the fact that you're not seeing anyone with smart glasses. I think the glasses are so good now, I think it's pretty hard to differentiate with some of the models between what's smart and what's not. And I think that's where you kind of get to the problem here. If you whiz all the way back to 2012, 2013, Google were very, very early. They released something called Google Glass, this big sort of slightly bulky headset. The biggest giveaway for Google Glass and the thing that people hated was the fact that when it was recording, a big red dot would flash on the top side. So it was obvious. We're now in a world where that's not happening. So there's not this really clear marker of, well, am I being recorded? Am I not? The cameras are more discreet. So I think that's the kind of, that's the worry for people.
I mean, and it is. I've seen, I mean, we've all probably seen those videos on social media where someone's going into a shop or running into a celebrity. They don't know they're being recorded. I mean, it's a bit weird. It's creepy. And it is a complete invasion of privacy. And it's going to be, if these things become more widely adopted, a huge societal issue.
I think you're probably right. And we've got to, it's like all kind of like this really edgy bit that you get with a new technology. We've got to navigate our way around it. There's, I think it's a bit stronger than etiquette here, but it's kind of no different to bringing a chatbot to a meeting and asking it to come in. It's like, unless we confront it head on and be like, right, when is it okay to do that? What's happening to the data? Let's get some answer to these questions. It's going to be the same with this. Like, how do I know someone's recording? How can I opt out of them posting something online? How can I make sure this isn't just falling into kind of bad actors who want to do not nice things with it? So I think there's all that sort of stuff to navigate. I think the numbers are pretty compelling here. Meta are saying that more than 7 million pairs have been sold already. And Meta and the makers of Ray-Ban, they're talking about producing 10 to 20 million units a year. I think that's pretty substantial. So yeah, wait and see. They're only going to be on the up. They're only going to get more sophisticated. They're only going to look sexier and more like proper glasses and sunglasses.
I tell you what. Anything that Mark the Zuckerberg wears will never be classed as sexy, James Chandler. Staying with the man, the myth, the legend, Mark the Zuckerberg, WhatsApp are launching an incognito mode for chats with Meta's AI chatbot, which means neither users nor Meta will have access to stored chat history. Now, this is interesting. It's been set up for sensitive conversations around topics like health and relationships and finances. They'll then disappear. But James, there could be some potential issues and harms here.
Well, I think you can. I mean, my mind first goes to what you've talked about. There could be some sensitivity. There could be some discreet advice you might want for something that you don't necessarily want your identity and everything that anyone ever knows about you pinned to. I think with anything like this, though, where you have anonymity, you know, that can be exploited. So I think, again, it comes back to guardrails around this thing. Are the intentions good? And actually, when I look at something like Reddit, so Reddit is a platform where I don't need to be logged in. I don't need to give my identity. I can ask things and be anonymous. I would say on the whole, from people when I've talked at Reddit, actually those conversations and those threads are kind of well-intended. There is always going to be someone who's going to try and exploit it for not good. But on the whole, I think there's an acceptance that anonymity does allow you to do sort of slightly different things, to get a bit deeper, to ask stuff that might be a bit more sensitive. So I'm not quite going into the doldrums on this one yet.
Okay, final news story for this week. James, are driverless cars coming? I don't know about you. I've seen loads of Waymos around London recently.
Yeah, exactly the same. I've seen loads. And people are fascinated with them. People are sort of taking pictures of them as they're kind of whirring their way around Soho and things like this.
It's slightly less cool when there's a man sat behind the wheel, when they're testing them right now. It's like, it just looks like he's driving.
It does. Exactly that. There's a few bits of nervousness flying around accidents. I remember this when the whole self-driving thing, when Tesla were really kind of were leading on that. So there are incidents, there have been some recalls in the US of some of the Waymo vehicles. all kind of teething problems. It's only going so far in London as some of the cars are going into restricted areas. Some of them are getting lost on dead end roads, which is sort of quite funny. Not really sure how to react in emergency scenarios. But of course, if you don't kind of put it into these scenarios, it's never going to learn. You can't do all this sort of stuff in a lab. I'm pretty excited by Waymo's, I must say. I think we should try and do, when the time is right, me and you, we do an episode in the back of a Waymo between one destination and another. I'd love that.
I'm down with that. This might surprise you slightly, but I'm all for Waymos.
Oh, not wearable sunglasses, but he's happy to get in a driverless car. Interesting.
I don't like driving. So frankly, I don't mind being driven around by a Waymo. And actually, you know what? There are huge issues. The glasses thing, they look a bit naff. There's privacy issues. And I think it would be a real shame if, you know, at the moment, I take the tube to work and I get on the tube and everyone, including myself, has got headphones in. And, you know, nobody talks, nobody looks at each other. It's only going to get worse if with these glasses. It's only going to make things, you know, it's only going to escalate that issue. Whereas driverless cars, you can have a nice conversation. You can in a mm-hmm. car because someone's not got to drive. You can play your music, whatever. And also, I would hazard a guess that actually these things are going to be way safer than human drivers once all the 100%. Testing is done.
They don't get tired. They don't drive without insurance. They don't miss roadside. Yeah, all the rest of it. Yeah.
So
good point.
You know what? I'm team Waymo. I'm team driverless car. I'm all here for it.
Okay, we need to get this episode sorted. Could do the whole thing then, really. Just get it out of the studio. Just do them in Waymos. Pick up a guest, talk to them, get them out. Thank you.
It's a good idea, that. We should do a collab. Waymo, if you're listening, we're open for business.
Mental acuity, my friend. Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Still to come on this week's show, James is tackling a listener question. We are going back to the future. And James's big thing after we take a break. James, you love hyping up AI, don't you?
Well, I'm glass half full about it, yeah.
That glass is overspilling.
Well, you could say I'm just embracing the future.
Half full. Half full? That glass is overspilling.
It's called embracing the future, my friend.
And yes, it obviously is important to do so, and that is what this show is all about, but things are just moving so quickly, it's hard not to question whether there's a disconnect between the tech advancements and what's actually happening in businesses and boardrooms.
I think AI over the last year has moved from probably what used to be a nice to have to a strategic necessity, if you wanted a posh term for it. And you know, we're seeing that for ourselves, even in the news that we cover on a weekly basis. And with that necessity, I think comes this huge pressure to keep up with AI. According to KPMG's latest AI Pulse, 70% of UK business leaders say AI will remain a top priority, with most ready to keep investing even before the ROI is fully proven.
But we often discuss on the show how a lot of AI initiatives struggle to take off or just implemented poorly, especially when it comes to trust, governance, or just getting the workplace ready to actually use AI.
But that's where KPMG come in. They're not just looking at the tech. They're actually helping organisations make the difference by turning AI ambition into a transformation you can actually trust. They focus on scaling with confidence, embedding governance from day one, and getting what everyone loves, measurable value.
And if you are ready to move beyond the pilot phase,
visit kpmg.co.uk/AI.
What's that?
That's kpmg.co.uk/AI to learn more.
Thanks, sorry, my hearing goes sometimes. Okay, James Chandler, are you ready to go where no human has ever been before?
I'm always nervous about saying yes at this point in the podcast, but I suppose I am.
Well, as you know, we've used the vehicle of popular culture to help explain some really key AI terms, whether that is EastEnders, whether that is Shakespeare, or even Love Island. We have quite literally been through a diverse range of cultural moments. But today, James, we're going back to the future! As the iconic 80s movie is going to explain hallucinations. So picture this, the DeLorean has just screeched into the parking lot in a blaze of smoke, Doc Brown, played by George Butler, jumps out frantically, holding papers, whilst Marty McFly, aka James Chandler, looks alarmed.
Doc, what the hell happened?
Great Scott! The AI! It's hallucinating!
Hallucinating? Like seeing stuff?
Not exactly, Marty. In AI, a hallucination is where the model confidently gives false information, as if it were true.
So it lies?
No, no. It's worse than lying. A liar knows the truth. The AI is just predicting likely words, and sometimes it generates complete nonsense that sounds convincing.
That's heavy.
Right. Say you ask an AI for a fact instead of saying, I don't know. It invents fake dates, fake quotes, even fake books.
So it just makes stuff up?
Precisely. Because large language models don't actually understand truth. They predict the next most predictable words based on patterns.
So if the pattern sounds right,
it may generate an answer that feels perfectly believable, even when it's completely wrong.
Whoa. So the AI can sound super confident while being totally clueless.
Exactly. Like Biff running for office. That's why hallucinations are dangerous. In medicine, law, science, you can't just have a machine inventing facts.
So how do they stop it?
Better training, fact-checking systems, retrievable tools, human oversights. But Marty, no AI is perfectly reliable.
So AI is like a DeLorean time machine. Much like you can't guarantee 1.21 gigawatt of power, you should never assume that AI is always true.
Truth? Where AI is going, we don't need truth. That is Back to the Future Explains AI. James, I guess you guys aren't ready for that yet, but your kids are going to love it.
Yeah. Okay, that was all right. That was okay. Where are you going on these? What's in your head?
I mean, not much is in my head would be the answer I would probably give. Listen, as I said before, if anyone would like to give us a topic or a theme, we're open. James, if there's anything you would like to suggest, we're open for business.
Really? No, I think we've done most of the big ones now. Could probably just draw a line under it if we...
Well, we'll see. Join us next week to see if that is the last of this series.
Yeah, I doubt it. Oh, Christ.
Let's move on the hell very quickly from Marty and Doc Brown. By the way, good Marty McFly, James. Good Marty McFly.
Thanks. Yeah.
Let's move on now to your big thing.
Big thing this week, I was sort of inspired by the panel that you did a couple of weeks ago that you came back from, the panel all around kind of
on
sustainability.
On
the environment. I was thinking about that and I saw this article, which is all around this place in Georgia where the residents had got very, very cross. A nearby data centre had used 30 million gallons of water and the only way that they'd noticed it was their water pressure had got a lot lower. And, you know, they're up in arms about it. And it throws up this whole debate around, oh, my God, how much water are these data centers using? And I was reading a couple of takes on this. There's a guy on the TikToks called Kyle Bulmer. He's kind of one of these AI creator, educator types, a bit like a sort of a Will Francis. He had a really interesting take on this, which is that water is a little bit of a red herring when it comes to AI, and AI can be a bit of a bogeyman. This 29 million gallons of water that the data center was using, it is a lot of water, but as humans, we struggle a little bit when numbers get to that sort of size. We can't sort of compare it to anything. 29 million gallons of water is the same amount of water it would take to make 40,000 burgers in the US. In the US, 50 billion burgers are made every single year. That's 137 million burgers per day. So the 40,000 burgers that you could make with this water is actually quite small. 0.03% of the burgers made in the US every single day will be the equivalent to the amount of water that was used in this data center. And just imagine, and this is what kind of Kyle gets into, just imagine if the same amount of scrutiny that perhaps we're putting on AI was to be put on the beef industry, was to be put on things like fast fashion, almonds, for example. You know, to do one almond, you need gallons and gallons of water. So this sort of hyper-fixation on AI is a kind of an interesting thing that's going on. There's lots of other industries not doing so well. And for me, it just got me thinking about some some sort of questions or posing some questions to it. I wonder, one, should we be giving it the level of scrutiny, and why on earth are other industries not getting the level of scrutiny? But the second thing is actually, because we're starting to hear about data centers in the UK, we've got these UK AI growth zones. There's Scotland, I think there's North Wales, there's some around London. If the impact on water is going to be so great that residents, for example, in North Wales start to lose water pressure, bills start to go up, you know, who's going to, you know, surely the AI company or whoever's using it should sort of put more back into that local infrastructure. We talked about a story a couple of weeks ago whereby the kind of the warnings are already there. UK data centres, it is thought, now account for around 6% of all the electricity usage, and that's only growing because of the demand. So there is sort of something interesting that we're going to have to confront on this, whether it's electricity, whether it's water. But I think my overriding reason why I made it the big thing here, and Kyle's really good, you should check him out, is just, you know, don't look at a big number and suddenly think, oh God, that thing must be bad. We have to try and be curious about where that's coming from, or where it's written, or what's it comparable to.
And James, we're gonna in a few weeks' time get Ben, who I did this panel with, on the show.
Oh, nice. Oh, he'll know all about this stuff then. Yeah.
So yes, we can dig into this and kind of explore it a little bit more. But for now, thank you for that, because it's time for our listener question with KPMG, where, of course, one of you listening puts James Chandler to the test with a question all about the wild world of AI. And if your question is asked on this podcast, you win yourself this. You get an AI having a clue. Oh, yes, you do. An AI having a clue t-shirt could be yours. And this week, that t-shirt is going to Charlotte in God's own country, Leeds, Yorkshire. Thank you for that, Charlotte.
That's what Yorkshire people say, isn't it? Yeah, God's own country.
God's country. Yes. Hello, Charlotte. Thank you for this question. Some people are furious about Disney cutting jobs because of AI, but would the same people cancel Disney Plus if prices doubled to keep every human role? Okay, interesting question, Charlotte. James, this obviously comes off the back of last week. We covered the fact that one of the stars of Marvel were really angry with Disney laying off a load of roles. Interesting question, controversial question. James, over to you.
It is a really, really good question. And I actually, there's sort of two sides to it in my mind. One is, I think what people say and what they do are quite different. So I think most people would say they care about human endeavor, human agency, creativity, all that sort of stuff. But the way they behave, I think, is a lot more brutal. So, for example, when self-checkouts came in, or you go to a McDonald's and you have to use a screen, or you go to your bank and, you know, you talk to a cashier anymore, you know, people are up in arms about it, but they still continue to use them because, you know, it's quicker, gets you through. Similarly, people still to this day get very worried about what Amazon might be doing to, you know, your local high street bookshop that's sort of, you know, been around the corner and is always there and employs lots of people. But those same people are still ordering next day delivery. And I think AI is going to follow the same pattern. There is going to be outrage, but I think for people's behavior to change completely is going to be very, very different. So I think if Disney can make films faster and cheaper with AI, I think most people who have a Disney Plus subscription won't cancel just because a team that is responsible for the sort of one part of that film's human effects gets replaced by, you know, AI or machines. And I think especially in a world and an economic climate right now where we've probably all got one too many subscriptions and those subscription prices are going up, I don't think people are kind of throwing those in the bin. I do think, though, if this was like a banking company, it might be different, but it's not. It's Disney. And I don't think people associate things like speed and efficiency with Disney. You know, these are people that are selling dreams, they're selling imagination, human storytelling, physical experiences like their parks, stuff like that. So I think people could cope with a insurance brand making, you know, finding your next home insurance cheaper with AI. I think people can do that. But this sort of magic that goes with Disney around creating films that kind of need humans to understand it, I think could become a little bit problematic reputationally for Disney if they don't get it right. I do think there is a really uncomfortable truth here, which is like people want cheaper subscriptions, they want more brilliant content, and they want it endlessly, but they don't want a human cost to it. And somewhere in that sort of triangle, one thing always kind of has to give. So I think what we've seen, you remember that DeepSeek article that we looked at, or it was one of the Chinese AIs where they'd done the Brad Pitt fight thing. I mean, it looked incredible. There isn't a noticeable difference at the moment, I don't think, between what the humans can create and what the AI can create. But imagine a world where Disney starts to feel a bit repetitive, a bit soulless, dare I say, a little bit sloppy. I think that's when, you know, they could have sort of crossed the Rubicon there and maybe have gone a bit too AI heavy rather than people. And I think that would lead way to other people who are saying, look, we're all about, we make stuff in a very human way. We have human storytellers. And people could kind of drift then and think, well, yeah, I want to invest in that. And I want people that kind of understand things rather than machines. So I think it's a really fine balance for Disney, this one.
It is. And, you know, you can't not help but pose the question, well, Disney Plus has added a huge amount of value to Disney as a business and to their share price. Mm. By those metrics, it's been a financial success. So, you know, why would it need to cut people to keep a reasonable Disney Plus cost for subscribers? Because at the moment, it's at a price set with real people in their jobs, and they obviously just let go of a lot of these people, but it's been able to compete at that level. So is AI coming in just to increase their profit margins? And if so, that's where things become even more problematic. So it's a very interesting question. Charlotte, thank you. Charlotte in God's own country, I should say, Leeds, Yorkshire.
Very good.
Thank you very much for asking it. And AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt is coming your way. James, that is a debate, you know, which we've had a lot before, and I think we're only going to have again and again. But it's an evolving debate, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's so nuanced on the type of company, though. Like I said, insurance, faceless insurance brand, where you don't really care what they're about, but you know, you really want the cheapest, most comprehensive quote you can, versus someone like a Disney. I mean, they're just so, so different.
Well, if your whole USP is magic, creativity, warmth, and family, then you cannot be reliant on AI, which many people would say is the antithesis of that.
Potentially, yeah.
But we will park that debate for now because it's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of AI Haven't a Clue. We're back on Monday, but for now, thank you for listening. A big thanks as well, of course, to Team AI Haven't a Clue, led by Molly Carter. If you've got a question, a weird AI story, if you would like to suggest AI Explains a future topic or theme for us, then we would love you to drop us an email at aihaven'taclue.com. As always, you can subscribe and support the show by sharing and rating the podcast and telling anybody you know that might want to learn a little bit more about AI. That's it for now. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. But James, for now, remember,
just stay curious.